We left off last week on Samach Gimel and Aleph, so let me just very, very quickly remind you of what the Al-Peh, what we said starting on Samach Beis Amid Beis and up until this point, which is that the Bei Rav Yanai used to borrow Perush Shvias from the Aniyim in the Shemitah year. They would consume them, and then at some point later, when the Perush had been consumed, they would pay them back the value of those payers. And in doing so, their argument, the assumption was that the money did not acquire the status, the taint, depending on what you want to call it, of Kedusha Shvias. Why? Because when they paid the money, if they had taken the money and bought the payer Shvias from the Aniyim with it right then and there, the money, the Shvias is Tofesus Asdama. So the money would have acquired the status of payer Shvias. But since they took it as a loan, by the time they're paying back, the payers of Shvias are no longer extant, and therefore there's nothing to be tofes the pidyon. The Kedusha Shvias is gone, and the money is just treated as regular money. And presumably this was done because it was to the benefit of the Aniyim. They could gather a little bit of payers of Shvias, a little extra payers of Shvias, and Rav Yanai, Bei Rav Yanai had used to eat those fruits, and now the Aniyim had a little bit of cash. The Gemara then quotes a brisa, which it modifies. I'll give you the modified version as the following. Talking about the din of Esnan Zona, the person who gives a hire to a harlot, where the Torah says you're not allowed to bring it as a karban, so if he gives her a sheep as her hire, so that sheep cannot be brought as a karban. So the Gemara talks about two scenarios. Number one, if he gives her a sheep, and then later is ba'aleha, that is not Esnan Zona. Number two, if he's ba'alaha and then later gives her a sheep, that's also not esnan zona. Apparently, he has to give the esnan, I don't want to say b'shas maisa mamish, but that's what the Gemara is going to explore. Presumably, what is taken as a given is that the status of esnan has to be chal, it has to set in upon the sheep at the time of the bia. And if it can't for whatever reason, then the service is provided or the service is provided, and the payment is just a gift, and it doesn't take on the status of Esnan Zona. So the Gemara, we already started dealing with the first half, which is, what if he gave her, the more obvious problematic case is when he gives her the tla and then is ba'al leha. Because you would say, in one second, he gives her the tla, the sheep has been designated, as soon as he has bia, that's a conditional matana. That's not an unconditional matana. He gives her the sheep and she's like, okay, have a nice day, and she goes off on a trip. Right? She goes to the butcher shop, to shechted, and says, I'll see you, in the next life or something like that. Obviously, we presume he is giving her the tla is contingent on the providing of services. So the Gemara recognizing the problem here, says it's a case where she acquires it right then and there when he gives it to her. K'ni lach me'achshav. She is told that she actually takes ownership of the tleh, not when she provides the services, but rather when he actually gives her the sheep. So that being the case, then of course the only question is pshita, the Gemara says. Of course it's not esnan zona, because the sheep is the sheep. He gives her, and it's, in other words, there is a little bit of a step further here, but the assumption is that the Gemara's assumption is that the kinyan has to take place b'shas bia. In other words, the makeh b'patish has to be what makes the kinyan, not just as a condition, but actually the time of the kinyan is the shas bia. So the Gemara says.
What about if he says it. In other words, he says, a month before, I'm giving you this sheep. On the deny that a month hence we will have relations.
So it sounds from the Gemara. Yeah. So if you don't say Kni Lach Me'achshav, right, then that's Esnan Zona. But it sounds from the Gemara Kni Lach Me'achshav, at least at first glance, means she's Kona now, and since she's not Kona B'shas Bia, even though presumably there would be, you might say the following: if she's Kona now, and she fails to live up to her end of the deal, so she owes him money. Right. It doesn't have to be this sheep. The sheep is hers because she acquired the sheep already. Okay, but you didn't provide the services, so whatever the value of the sheep was, now you have to pay me that back. And then the Gemara just says, well, pshita, after all, it's a matana b'yalma.
He doesn't want to be paid back in money. He wants, as I say, he wants the service. That's what he said. So for the service, if I knew, I would never give you the matana. If you told me, if I knew I was going to only get money
so
back.
So the halacha is the following, in terms of labor law. If I pay somebody for their, for whatever, something not the old world's oldest profession as we have here, something more dignified. All right, I hire them as a carpenter. I give them the cash up front, and then they say I can't do the job. The answer is they come back at it, they have to give you the money back. That's all. There's no, you're not bound. There's no, if you require an object, if you make a kinyan, we're going to be talking about this because it's going to come up later in the Amud. If you make a kinyan, Sam, let's say chalipin on my phone. Okay, you make a kinyan chalipin on my phone. So if you give me, let's say giving me cash. Thank you. Let's say giving me cash would constitute a kinyan chalipin. Right? It doesn't, but let's say it did. Once you give me the cash and I take it, I have to deliver the phone because it's your phone. That's only true when it's a tangible object. If it's the promise of services, then you can always back out. We say, Ki li b'nei Yisrael avadim, avadai heim v'lo avadim l'avadim. The only worker who cannot back out when he has agreed to work for something is an Eved Ivri. There's an Eved Ivri, in effect, is Gufo Kanur. That's what's this. An Eved Ivri is a Sakhir, but who's bound to the terms of a service. He can't just back out. Whereas any other Poel can always back out. If he causes financial loss in the process, then the Mishnayos talk about what the owner can do, but even there, it's his liability is somewhat limited. You can learn the Mishnayos at the beginning of one of the two Hasochers. I think it's the first one, Hasochers Apolim, which I think is the sixth parak of Bava Metzia. If not, it's the seventh. So they talk about those details. So the point is that even if she owes him money, let's say the sheep is worth $50, even if she owes him money, the sheep is hers already now. That would be the principle. So then the only question is, the Gemara says, Pshita, well, of course. In other words, he gave her a sheep. I mean, it terms it Matana Balma, but obviously it's a Matana with an assumption that she's going to be getting, he's giving something back. And then, in fact, I think they erase that. The Bach erases that line in the Gemara. So then the Gemara says, Pshita. So the Gemara says, no. And the key is that she's able to. The case is the following. He says that, remember, the answer, firstly, the starting answer of Rabbi Elazar was, she's already sacrificed the animal. It doesn't exist anymore. The Esnan can't be Chal. So the Gemara says, one second, how did she bring the carbon? In other words, you can't bring a carbon if it's not yours. The answer is, he tells her, K'nilach me'asha, acquired from now. She acquired it already. He says, of course, Pshita. So the Gemara says, though, the answer is, he gives it to her and says, that really, this should be with you in Achas Bia, which really means you're supposed to be Kona when the Bia takes place. But, if you need it now, you can use it now. And therefore, since she has the option on it to take possession now and to use it now, and she goes and brings it as a carbon, that was legitimate, it was hers, he gave her a shus. And now, it means, in effect, that she just owes him the money. She owes him the services, she owes him the money, one of the two. So that's where we were up to in the Gemara. So now the Gemara on the ninth line or so on Samach Gimel and Aleph presents the following. Boi Rab Hoshaya, Kidmo v'hikti shatu mahu. So remember, he told her the following. This sheep, this tle should be with you. Achas bia. Okay. Now, if that's all he said, then obviously it's Esnan Zona. When he has Bia, the Esnan sets in. But he added, but if you need it, you can use it. And she decided she needed it. Prophylactic atonement. So she wants to bring a carbon. And so she goes ahead and she brings the carbon. And since she was allowed to do that, she's able to amount to and the carbon and the animal no longer exists. The Esnan's not Chal. So Rabbi Hoshaya asked the following question. Supposing she was makdeshes it. She designates it to hekdesh. But it hasn't been brought as a carbon yet. So the animal is still extant, but it belongs to hekdesh.
Then it's really not hers.
So that's the interesting question. So let's read how the Gemara presents the tzadim. Mahu. Now, just a comment here, which is totally irrelevant to what we're going to be our analysis, but because I've been doing this a lot in my Shir and Baba Kam at YU, it's come up a lot. The next line in the Gemara is not Rabbi Hoshaya talking. Rabbi Hoshaya asked the question. His question was, Kidma v'hikti shatu mahu. The two explanations, the two sides, the two tzedadim of the Ibaye, of the question, are not Rabbi Hoshaya speaking. It's the Gemara filling in. And it is occasionally, I'm not going to suggest this here, but it is sometimes, this is really, it's a method that the Balei HaTosfos use that is more common in academic Talmud, but the academicians did not invent this. This was known to the Balei HaTosfos, is to suggest sometimes that this was not necessarily the only way of understanding what Rabbi Hoshaya's question was. Okay, but that said, I'm going to just read it straight. I'm not interested in arguing, was there another possible meaning of Rabbi Hoshaya's question? He says, Kidma v'hikti shatu mahu. Because on the one hand, it doesn't belong to her anymore. And on the other hand, it's not, it's still extant. So kevan da amarmar ami rasa legavam kimsi rasa lehedyot keman da akrivate dami. Do you say that since we have a principle that this is a Mishnah in Kiddushin, ami rasi legavoa kimsi rasi lehedyot? That means, normally, when we make a kinyan, if I say, Marshall, I want to give you my phone, or I want to give you my watch, and you say, great, I'll take it, I promise to give it to you, it's not his. It's not his, and I can walk away. It's maybe what we call mechusrei amana. I'm not a good person, but he has absolutely no legal claim whatsoever. Even if we talk about all sorts of deals we want to make, in fact, as we'll see, even if he gives me the cash, I can give him the cash back and say, no, thank you. You have to make a kinyan on the object. So, the one exception, Amira, almost never constitutes a kinyan. There are certain things that we say are nicknamed by Amira, but the general rule is that without a kinyan, something is considered an asmachta. Now, some of us have encountered asmachta in the context they talk about gambling, right? Why is gambling a problem? Because it's, forgetting about the moral dimension to it, because it's asmachta. So when you take the money that you want in gambling, it's not really yours, because the person didn't really think he was going to lose. Putting aside the specific context of asmachta in the context of gambling, asmachta is a major, major, major topic in Hoshin Mishpat, in laws of Kinyanim. Asmachta means there has to be, you know, in secular law, the closest analog is consideration. So, for example, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, Marshall, but if I say that, I'm going to finish building your house by December 1st, and if not, I'll pay you a $100,000 penalty, that unless it can be disguised as liquidated damages or something, at least that's why I'm led to believe that often it's not enforceable, because that's called penalty. There has to be consideration. So if there are damages, if it's described as damages or it could be seen as such, so then it could be enforceable. You'll say it's always enforceable?
You're blending like four different concepts.
Okay.
Liquidated damages only apply where actual damages are difficult to ascertain, where the damages bear a reasonable relation to actual damages, okay, and there are specific contractual provisions. That's totally separate from consideration.
Okay. Well, isn't the consideration the fact that I damaged you? Let's say there's no damage. I agree to build the house by December 1st. And if not, I'll pay a $100,000 penalty. Is that enforceable?
First, there has to be a contract.
Yeah.
Contract, there has to be consideration. Once there's a binding contract with consideration, liquidated damages can be agreed to by contract in those specified conditions. So if you've contracted in a binding way to build the house, and there's underlying consideration, and then you breach the contract, and then the liquidated damages meet those two promissory law, then they can be enforceable. Whether it's oral or written, that's a different question.
No, so I'm just saying, I don't say it's a contract, and I don't want to prolong it, but my understanding is that penalty stam may not be enforceable.
Again, the way to say it correctly is they have to bear a reasonable relationship to actual damages.
Right, that's...
And the damages have to be difficult or impossible to ascertain. You can't say $10 million.
Correct. So in halacha, that's called asmachta. Right? In other words, asmachta is that there is no consideration. The way, by the way, Rabbeinu Tam gets around asmachta, his argument by gambling, not that he's advocating gambling, it would call him ruzezeh, is that even though I got nothing when I lost the bet, I give you the money, but it was the possibility that I would win the money, that is the consideration in halacha that might make it not asmachta. So asmachta, asmachta comes up in many contexts, and one of it is that when I don't actually make a real kinyan, I just say I'm going to give it to you. That's dvarim ba'alma, and it's an asmachta, and it's not kone. The only time dvarim is typically kone is when you undertake an action on my behalf. I asked you to go to the store and buy a product for me, and you go ahead and do it, and I change my mind. Now, I didn't make a kinyan or anything, but because you undertook an action and took a hefset on my behalf at my request, therefore, there's a kind of buy, when you get the object from the store, you have to make a kinyan on it, but then it becomes mine even though it's only through dibur. There are situations as well where the halacha says, hein dvarim haniknim b'amira, in certain contexts of shiduchim. Today, when we do tanayim at a wedding, so tanayim are fake, right? Everything's been done already. You were at the wedding. It was what they promised they were going to do. So as I like to say, when I make a kinyan with the fathers, this is what we call a kinyan about nothing. And then, but more than that, the pashtus is that it shouldn't require a kinyan, because the Gemara speaks about that if two people, families get together and they each agree, I'm going to pry this, you're going to pry that, and they agree, hein hein dvarim ha'niknim b'amira. Because of the joy of this union, these are things that you don't even need to make a kinyan on, because there's gemiras das. There's absolute commitment, and it's not an asmachta. Yeah. Okay.
That's the law that means certain types of promises are enforceable, but made only orally. But most things, including any contract, require over a year to perform. Ironically, marriage-related contracts and sale of goods above a certain amount have to be in writing, or else they're currently unenforceable. So,
okay. So I'm.
The law has an analog to oral versus written agreements with rules about when.
Right. So, but I would say that even in the context of asmachta, having it written probably doesn't make a difference. I shouldn't say there are ways of using it to make a difference, but it doesn't automatically make a difference. Still can be asmachta.
Give an example. Right. I'm just saying oral versus written.
Okay.
The rubric you're looking for is the statute of fraud, not what the data
tells. Okay. So, there is one exception to the rule where dibor is a kinyan. And that is amirasi lagavoa kimisirasi lahejod. By hekdesh, simply the act of declaring hekdesh, it's true by tzedakah as well. Tzedakah is a kind of hekdesh, if you designate a specific object. It's that it is chal through amira, and you don't require a kinyan. Why? Because presumably you know the way it is. There are lots of people who would, you know, cheat in business, but they don't mess around with God. That's the human psychology. So therefore, when someone says, I'm designating this to God, they really mean it. You know, there are certain people you just don't want to mess over because, you know, they might choose to respond. So
is it they really mean it, or is that God really wants it?
No, it means it doesn't matter what God wants.
Yeah.
I mean, it might in the larger scope of things, but in the context of kinyanim, it only matters what the individual who's the owner of the property, despite that Lashama Aretz Umloa, nonetheless, the individual owns the property. The reason why Amirasi Lagavoa is because each person is serious. It's not an asmachta, because they are really committed to doing so. So the Gemara says on one side, maybe once she transfers it, she designates as hekdesh, that's enough. The object, for all intents and purposes, doesn't exist because she's not the owner anymore. On the other side, the Gemara says, nah, but maybe the animal is still extant and the esnan can be chal upon it. Now, the Rishonim don't really, as far as I can see, explain what's the question here. What exactly is the question here? Meaning, I assume, I would ask the following question. Once the object is given to hekdesh, I can't sell it, I can't do anything with it. So why is it possible even that esnan will be chal upon it? How is it? In other words, her ability.
She can't redeem it anymore.
No, she can't, because it's a regular healthy sheep that's brought as a carbon.
She has no ability.
She can't redeem it anymore. So the question is, why would you say that since it's still extant, or let me formulate the question differently, what is her relationship? What is her relationship to this object that the esnan can be chal upon it? And I understand the other side. I don't even know why the Gemara uses the term, she has the power to be makdashit. The Gemara worked that out already, right? He gave her permission that if she wanted to use it, the first case of the Gemara, the one that Rehoshai seems to be working, you know, coming as the second step, is that she brought it as a carbon already. When she brought it as a carbon already, there's nothing to talk about. The animal doesn't exist anymore. Right? You're not going to say, but now it's, you know, in the dead form, it's esnan. You know, it's gone. So the question is, even here, once she transmits it, once she gives it over to the possession of Hekdesh, granted through Amira, it wouldn't matter. In other words, even if it weren't Amirasi Lagavon Ksirasi Lahadjud, let's say you had to make a Kenyan by Hekdesh. So let's say she made a Kenyan. So what is it that, why do we think that maybe...
Once it becomes Hekdesh, can she decide how it's going to be used? She decide how... Hekdesh will use it? What carbon it'll be used for?
No, when you designate something as Hekdesh, I can't tell you it's impossible, but if it's a Hekdesh Lamizbeach, if it's an animal, it's a kasher, you're not allowed to give it to Bedek Abayis. And it's always assumed, I'm not familiar with a single case, so it raises interesting questions, of someone who says, I'm designated as a carbon, but I haven't decided which one yet. When you make the shit Lamizbeach, I believe you have, I mean, I don't have an explicit source I've ever seen, but just sort of, you know, inductively, it seems that you have to designate what is its status. Right, Marshall?
With respect to the modern analog setup, exactly, because this is a very real question, you think to yourself, you know what, I'm going to give $1,800 to this, versus you say to your spouse, we should give $1,800 to this, versus I've decided to give $1,800. Where is the line where you no longer have a choice but to make the donation?
So that's a different question. You made an assumption, which is possibly a correct assumption, probably a correct assumption, which is why that tzedakah and hekdesh have another unique feature, which is that unlike most areas of hafla, of nedarim and things like that, it's kol nediv lev. Even if a person is thinking, which is why the Rav, if I remember correctly, for her Shechta, was makpid, he told people, when they schnutter you, and you make the Misha Berach, you don't say matana. You specify an amount, because the concern is, the person is thinking his heart, he's feeling very, he got very mechubad with the aliyah there, and he's thinking, oh, I'm going to give a lot of money, and then he realizes he comes down, and is like, oops, that was not a good idea. So therefore, if you actually state something, then we're not going to pay attention to what you were considering and believe. How you decide how much is, you know, it's, verbally speaking, it's easy to know what you committed to. You either say the words or you didn't say the words. It's very hard to know, what is a commitment in the heart and what is not a commitment. There are probably things that are clear, there are things that are not clear. So it's very hard to say.
But, even if you think?
Yes. Hey. By tzedakah and hekdesh, it's called nediv lev.
How does that work? How is that tofes?
So that's Xeris HaKosov, that Kol Nediv Lev, by the Mishkan, that comes to Hekdesh, and I think the Gemara says it applies to Tzedakah as well.
Oh, they're just applying...
Nidre Tzedakah, Nidre Hekdesh, yeah. Yeah, so a person should be very careful. When you know you're getting an aliyah, and you're going to take a pledge matana, you should, you're better off announcing it, or you better stop and think and say, listen, whatever I decide at the time they're doing this, so that is binding, so... Guys, I'll answer it with you, but that's not relevant to our thing here, because here, for whatever reason, Gemara invokes Amirasa the Gemara Sosaladu, but that may not really matter, but go ahead. Yes.
So one, if you say out loud to anyone, I'm giving X to Y charity, it's binding, you have to do it.
Assuming you're making the pledge when you say that. Let's say I'm talking and I'm bragging to somebody because there's and say I'm giving. That's you mean. Someone will ask you, "Will you donate?" And you'll say, "I'm giving." Right. In other words, because you could be lying about what you pledged.
You're just telling your spouse, whatever the fact pattern is. If other than it's a joke or braggadocio, you articulate.
If you're as a commitment, yes, it's binding.
Okay.
Yep.
Number two, you think that thought definitively in your heart. This year we need to go up to $100 for your day. It's not right that we only did $72 last year. That's what we're going to do. You think that, you're also bound.
Yes.
That's a full Nadiv left. Doesn't you articulate to anybody?
Yep.
You're no longer permitted not to give $100 for your day.
Correct.
I think the Arsul Siddur says, Bayiskar, when you're pledging money, it says, Bali Nedim.
Okay, so then, if you say Belina, that means I'm not really pledging. It means it's an aspiration. I hope to do it, but I'm not committing myself. Right? That's what Belina there means.
You gotta really be careful.
Yeah. My personal practice when I get an aliyah on Yom Noraim, and I know that they're going to do that, is I give the money before to the shul, and I ask the gabbai to say, I've already given, because I don't like the pledge before, and I say, Bavor Shanasa Matana. I've already given. Nothing to talk about. But that would be true, even if I knew a definitive amount. Tova Shalotidor. So anyway, but yes, if you think that, Begimira slave, it is binding. Yes. Okay. So I want to suggest the following.
Just one relevant question. So is there an actual case where a sheep or something was given and they found out something bad about the giver and they decided at that point, even though it was kosher, not to bring it as a korban? Is that a possibility even?
If the korban is legitimate and the person is able to bring it, so I think they would bring the korbanos. That's all. I'm not aware of.
What's even the question here? Why is...
No, the question is, Esnan Zon is an Isser. It's not just a bad thing.
But it's not. You're past that. The korban's already pretty much been given. So
the Gemara, that's our question. If the animal's already in Hekdesh's possession, and she was allowed to do that, what difference does it make now that she engages in an act of znus that was tied to that originally? It's not hers anymore. In other words, if it belonged to her when she provided the services, so you would say, since she chose not to use it until then, now is when she's kona, and the kinyan and the estan is chal. But since she already gave, if she already brought it for sure, and she could bring it, it's gone. Nothing to talk about. But the question is, if she gave it to Hekdesh already, why would you assume now that it's not in her possession anymore? She's used it already. Okay, it hasn't been brought yet. It hasn't been incinerated or hasn't been shechted. But why would you assume that the Esnan could be Chal? In other words, the Esnan is a product of her actions, right? She does something in exchange for something. But it's not hers anymore. So the question is, why?
Well, so you wrapped up something, and now it develops, and it was a Sholem animal, no, and it develops a pogam. I mean, you don't say... it's a physical change in the reality of the animal.
Yeah, but that's an objective change, which is not the product of what I would call a chalos, some legal status change. That's a physical change.
Try to move them together.
I hear what you're saying, but I think that's not. I think it's not a reasonable, an unreasonable suggestion. But I think the difference is one of them is just a fact. The other one requires a chalos, and as it requires my affecting a legal status change.
The extent to have that chalos.
What's that?
It needs just to be extent to have the chalos.
Let's say a harlot, a prostitute, makes her money from her behavior.
Right.
So before this episode occurred, you know that what she's giving to you is coming from behavior.
Okay, so let me take a time out for 1 second and let me make the following point, just so you understand why the Gemara is so narrowly focused. Esnan Zona is only Chal on the object that's actually brought as a carbon. So much so the Gemara says that it's a machlokes beisham beis hillel, but beis hillel says gam shnehem, and shnehem is to exclude shinuyehem. In other words, if he gives her wheat and she grinds it up into flour, which is a shinui, there's no isser esnan zona on bringing that as a carbon mincha. And I think also chilufem, when she swaps, in other words, you give her cash and she buys a tefillah with that, that's not esnan zona. It's esnan zona. In a moral sense, you'd say she's engaged in a disreputable profession, but on a technical level, esnan zona is an issur that's chal on a specific object whose body, whose guf, would be a carbon. And therefore, it's not enough that her bottom line is impacted, in fact, created by the fact that she's a zona, but rather it has to be a specific object that attracts or obtains the status of esnan zona. So that's why that's the question. Once she's given the tlet to Hekdesh, it's not hers anymore. How is it? What's the second side, the second possibility in the Gemara that since it's still extant, now all of a sudden it would become Esnan Zona? So really, when you drill down, the question is really about what connection does a person have to an animal which they designate as a carbon once they've designated it. Now, to give you an example, but it's not a good, and it doesn't work in our situation. There is a machlokas about the following. When you steal from somebody and you're caught, you're a ganav, you pay kefal. If you steal from Hekdesh, there's no kefal. Now, what happens if you accept a nether upon yourself? I have to bring a carbon. Now, when you accept a nether, hare alai, you then have to take an animal and bring it as the carbon. What happens if you take an animal, you set it aside to be the fulfillment of that carbon, and the animal drops dead? So then you have to bring another one. That's what's called the nether as opposed to a nadava. Nadava is just when I say, hare zil. I'm taking this animal and I'm dedicating it for its sacrificial purposes. If the animal dies, I never accepted an obligation upon myself. Now, let's say I have an animal which is a nether. And I take a nether, and I have an animal which I designate, and then you come and steal that animal. Now, if that animal disappears and never comes back, what's going to happen? I have to bring another carbon. So the question is, would you pay kefal under those circumstances? Because there, your theft is causing a loss to not Hekdesh, but to a hedyot. And the answer appears to be no. It's a machlokas, but the machlokas is about whether davar hagorim lamamon kamamon dami. Something which you're not actually stealing my thing, but by stealing you cause a loss to me. whether or not that constitutes money. It's an achlokas Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim in the Mishnah in the seventh parak of Bava Kama. When he says, when you steal, hektesh sheyesh lo achrayus, that there's an obligation upon the owner to make good if the animal gets damaged, lost, etc., stolen. So do you have to pay kefil in those circumstances? So I don't think that's quite what we're dealing with here, but that's a step a little bit in the direction suggesting that sometimes an owner, the person who dedicated an animal to hektesh, still maintains a monetary relationship with it. Now here, and I would never have thought of this except for the Daf Yomi doing it today or yesterday, approximately these days, there is a very interesting case that the Gemara talks about which would suggest the possibility of there being an element of a relationship to a karban, even once you're makdish it. And the question is the following. If you dedicate an animal as a karban, you're not allowed to swap it out. It's an isser of tamura, right? You're not allowed to be meimir a behema, even if you want to give a better animal. There's an isser to do so, and if you do so, it's what we would call a fail. The original animal retains all its kedusha, and the second animal becomes a tamura. Whatever the implications of that, it also has kedusha, and sometimes is even brought as a karban as well. What about if a man has an animal and he dies? And now, can his yoresh make a tamura? And the answer to that question is the machlokas, the chacham, Rabbi Yehuda. I think the Mishnah says that a yoresh is meimir. So you have to ask yourself the question, how is it that a yoresh can be meimir? Meimir, how can he make a tamura? Clearly, if you dedicate an animal, Josh, to hektesh, and I walk and I say, harezer tamura zo, it's no dice, nothing happens. There's no isser because nothing happens. Your animal has kedusha. My animal has no kedusha. But I have to be the owner of the carbon in order to make the tamura. So the question is, why can a yoresh? So in other words, there is a xeris akasav, by the way, obviously, that when you can make a tamura in your animal, which in itself suggests you have a relationship. But okay, that might be sort of exceptional. But the fact that a yoresh, according to one opinion, can also make a tamura. Meaning it's chal, it's ineffective, but it's effective. I mean, the animal becomes kadosh, even though the original animal still retains its kedusha. How can a yoresh do that if not for the fact that the assumption is that when the man dies, he's bequeathing some monetary aspect of the carbon to his heir? So that, I assume that is really the question that's really behind this, even though it's not the neatest way the Gemara formulates it, is what type of a monetary relationship does a person have to the animal, the person who's makdish it, and what is the impact of that monetary relationship on any number of other areas in halacha? To say that a person has no connection whatsoever to the animal when they're makdish it, after they're makdish it, is not true. Beyond their obligation to make sure it's brought so they fulfill their vow, they fulfill the nether so they have to bring another animal. But clearly there is some type of a relationship beyond that. And the question is, what is the extent of that relationship? And I think that in effect really has to be the Gemara's question here. The Gemara's question here is whether amirasi legavoa kemsirasi lehedyot means, for all intents and purposes, I was makta the animal to hektesh, and all other strings that I have attached to it are really secondary. The primary monetary aspects all belong to hektesh, and therefore esnan zona, which is transactional in its nature, cannot be chal upon it. Or do we say that no? That esnan zona doesn't need a strong monetary relationship, it needs even a weak monetary relationship to that animal, and therefore, if the woman that consecrated the animal and the animal was sacrificed, well, it doesn't exist anymore, so there's nothing to talk about. But if she's only consecrated it, so there is some type of relationship, even monetary relationship that she may have with it, that might be enough to say that the esnan zona can now be chal upon it. Okay, so that was the Gemara's question. That was Hoshaya's question. If the zona, who had permission, if she needed the animal to do whatever she wanted with it, if she really needed it, was makdeshes or makdisha the animal, but actually they did not bring it yet, can the iser esnan zona be chal? So the Gemara now says the following. V'tishot midirabi Elazar. Why can't we resolve it from Elazar, which we quoted above? The Amr of Elazar, shekidmo v'hikrivatu. Rabbi Elazar explains the case where nosanla v'achar kach ba'aleha. You want to know the case in which the esnan zona is not chal? It's when she went ahead kadma v'hikrivatu. She brought it already. Not just that she... Now, so the Gemara makes an inference. It makes a diuk. Davka hikrivatu aval k'dishatu lo. Can we not infer from Rabbi Elazar that it's only because she actually, the sacrifice was brought, and it would not have been enough just if she had been makdisha it? Why? Because if it was enough for her to consecrate it, then he should have said that. That would have been the bigger chiddush. Exactly. So the Gemara...
The animal dies. He gives her the animal, and the animal dies.
Right.
And they have, and then,
so then the question is irrelevant because Esnan Zona is only on things that have Kedushas Haguf, things that you're going to bring on the Mizbeach. You can't bring in that animal. So it's irrelevant.
Yeah, doesn't have to, so if he now has to replace that animal.
Oh, I don't know if he has to replace. Oh, I don't know.
No, he.
So if he has to replace the animal and then he gives it to her for the Zona, then I'm sure it's Esnan Zona. But we're not doing the Sugya of Esnan Zona. I know it sounds like we are, but we're not. So I don't actually know for sure what it would be. That's a contractual issue, right? So now the Gemara says, you know what? The Rabbi Elazar Gufe Kami Ba'ilei. Rabbi Hoshaya was actually wondering about, Rabbi Hoshaya's question wasn't a question of vacuum. He actually was asking, what was Rabbi Elazar's intent when he said, Shekadma Vikrivatu? So he says, Elazar Gufa Mi Ba'ilei. My, Mifshap Shita Le Rabbi Elazar Dikrivatu Davka Aval Hikti Shatu Lo. Was Rabbi Elazar absolutely certain that it had to be Hikrivatu? Because Hikrishatu the Eslam of Michal, the Isa Bishas Bia, because it's still extant at the time of the Bia. O Dilma, maybe Rabbi Elazar Hikrivatu Pshitale, but Hikrishatu Misapkale Teku. Maybe the reason why Rabbi Elazar gave the case of Kadma the Hikrivatu is because he wasn't sure about whether Hikrishatu. He himself was Mesupak, whether or not Hektish would be enough to avoid the Eslam Zon being Chal. So he just gave the case where it's obvious, Kadma Vikrivatu, so of course Eslam Zon is not Chal. But it could be, Rabbi Elazar just didn't know about what the din would be by Kadma Vikrivatu, and that's what Hoshai is asking. He wants to know, and he doesn't answer the question. Either the Gemara concludes by stating Teku.
For someone to state the case they're certain about, but not state the case they're...
I think that this type of question situation arises frequently in Shas.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's pretty frequent. Okay. And we're
so
not
the take was on what? On
the take was on Rav Hoshaya's question. Rav Hoshaya's question. We don't know what the din is by Kadma. Kadma v'hikti shatu in this case? No, v'hikrivatu? Fine, obviously. Kadma v'hikti shatu is a suffix.
What is the din?
Suffix. We don't know what the din is. So probably, what would you do with the tleh? So whenever you have an animal that doesn't have a mum, and it is kadosh la mizbeach, but you're not sure whether you're allowed to bring it or not, what you have to do is you let it graze until it gets a mum, and then you redeem it. Yes. The expression is, yir'eh ad sheyista'ev. Let it graze until it becomes tame. Tame means, in this case, it has a mum. So that's what they do with it. Yes. Okay. So we're not done yet, because we only did the first half now. This was the case of nasan la uba aleha. Now we have to do with the other case, which is ba aleha, and only gives it to her later. Now that case would seem to have been more obvious that it should be mutter, because the bi has happened already, he hasn't given her anything. That's also the case that's analogous to what the Bei Rabbi Yanai did, right? The aniyim, they took the pay, they borrowed the pay shvius from the aniyim. They eat the pay shvius, in other words, they're gone, and now later you pay. So here you have the maise bia, that's gone, and now let you to pay some money. So why would you even think would be the question? Why would the Esnan be chal upon it? Now, the intuitive way of having Esnan is he brings the sheep to her house, she provides it, brings it in, she provides the services, the sheep is now hers. Now, the Esnan is kona for her, the sheep. But clearly, if she gave the services first, and then later he's paying her, so I know we would say it's payment for, but the Maisa Znus cannot be chal upon something that wasn't designated, wasn't hers. So, and that was the analog too. When Rabbi Yanai pay the cash, they're no payer of shvius anymore. What's this chal upon? It's paying off a debt in the same way that giving her the tla later is paying off a debt. But the crucial point is that paying off a debt doesn't mean that the damim are nispasim. In other words, the kedusha doesn't set in on the money.
So then when they do the act. She now is like lending him money. She's lending him money.
Yes. That's in effect.
I'll lend you the money to pay for this act, and now pay me back the loan
I want to only correct one detail, but I don't want to go deep into this. It may not be technically a loan, but it's the equivalent of a loan. I say it's not technically a loan. There is a process known as zakva alav benilva. If someone owes me money, let's say I do work for the shul, and Lenny says I need another signature for the check, so I can't give it to you right now. But you know what? The shul will owe you the money. I say fine. So that might be what initially, it was wages that were owed. If I agree, you know, and let's say the shul doesn't have, let's say they don't have money in the account right now. They're waiting, there's something in the bank they need another month. I agree that the shul will owe me the money. I may have then, depending on the circumstances, converted into a loan. What's the difference? The one difference would be whether Shemitah dissolves it. Shemitah doesn't annul. The Shemitah Skafim doesn't annul workers' wages, Schar Sachir. It doesn't annul a pikadon, what we call a pikadon, but it does annul a loan. So I don't know in this case whether technically it becomes a loan in the classic sense, but it's like, you might say it's wages owed. It's wages owed, but the esnan zona, it has to be chal apparently, what the Gemara assumes, and it will be clear even in the conclusion, the esnan has to be chal on the object at the time of the bia. So, the Gemara says the following. Now
in the
we,
middle of the act, if they start to make the exchange.
Yes.
But it hasn't been completed yet.
So now you're going to get into the question. You know, Chaim Saman wrote a very, very interesting book. I don't know the beginning of it. I have to actually have to respond as part of a panel to it. I highly recommend. You would probably enjoy the book. What's, you know, the name of the book? Chaim. You just look Chaim Saman. He's a law professor at Villanova. He just published a book. It's about Talmud Torah, about the nature of study. It's really fascinating. And he talks about when he was in a student there in Yisrael, where they're learning Kiddushin, and then the question is the following. You know, the woman is in the middle, the woman wants to know for Kiddushin, where we say that one of the three forms of Kiddushin is Bia, Bia's Kona. They want to know whether Tchilas Bia's Kona or Sof Bia's Kona. And what's the Nafka Mina? Tchilas Bia means initial penetration, and Sof Bia means complete penetration. So what's the Nafka Mina? If that in the middle of the act, between Tchilas Bia and Sof Bia, she stretches out her hand, Pashtayad of the Kibla Kiddushin Me'achar. She accepts Kesef Kiddushin from somebody else. Now, the construction
romantic.
Of... What's that?
Romantic.
Indeed. The construction of the case in real life is absolutely absurd, but it speaks to very much the nature of the legal enterprise, right? Anybody who's trained as... Whether you spent time in the base matters, or even if probably you spent time in a law school, you know, so you understand what the nature of this question is. The scenario is absurd, but it's trying to highlight a question and establish a certain kind of principle. So you're asking... Sam is asking an absolutely legitimate question. What causes the esnan to be chal? Tchilas bia or sof bia? I don't know if I can answer that question, actually. No, I'm not sure I know the answer. All right. And you could also ask the following. Well, what goes along with that, the analog, is to make a kinyan. But what if you only have tchilas bia? So that question, I think, I can answer almost certainly.
Does it matter?
What's that?
So for beginning or end, does it really matter?
Well, you could argue it's an either, but I would suggest that as a general rule in halacha, with one exception, only one exception, tchilas bia is already considered bia. The only exception, if you're familiar with the parasha of Shivcha Charufa, and parashas Kedoshim, you might, if you say Eza Makoma, and you might not know what it is, but you say Asham Shivcha, one of the six Asham is Hashem Charufa, that's the only case of bia that requires Gemar bia. But everything else, Tchilas bia, is enough for essentially everything, for changing the status of the woman, for the chiyuv of a carbon, if it entails a carbon, kareis, misa space, and everything Tchilas bia is enough. So, let's put that aside for the moment.
You need to get.
What?
You need to get.
Correct. You absolutely need to. Lamaskana. Actually, is Kedushin? I want to take that one back. In Arayos,
anyway.
What's that?
As I recall once, if you already signed Kanan, you need to get two, but no?
No. I don't think so. No. So the only question, I don't know what the Gemara's Maskana was there. I know the Mishnah in Yivamos says for all Averos, for Arayos purposes, for Paslin the Isha, if it was a Bia Visser and so on, all of those things, it's Tchilas Bia is enough. I don't remember. For Yibum, it's Kona. I don't remember... I can't imagine Kiddusha's exception to that. I thought Shivcha Charufa was the only exception. But anyway. Okay, so coming back to our story here. So now the Gemara says the following. Ba'aleha v'acha kach nasan la'asnan amutter. Between the two dots, that's a quotation from the Braisa earlier. Or it's not a quotation from the Braisa, it's our modified version of the Braisa. Right? He has bia with her, and then he gives her esnan amutter. V'riminhi. We have a contradictory Braisa. Ba'aleha if he has bia with her, even if he says he gives her payment 3 years later, the esnan is chal on that. Okay? Because the assumption is it was payment for the bia. So how do you reconcile that with our rereading of the Braisa? So Amar of Nachman bar Yitzchak, Amar of Chista Lokasha. Hada Amar hisba lili bitlezeh. Hada Amar la hispali bitlestan. If he says to her, and he designates that particular tle, even though he doesn't deliver it for 3 years, because the tle was designated, the specific one, at the time of the biyah, it's just a question of when it gets delivered, but it's hers from the time of the biyah. But if he says to her, you can't say that she was kona the tle, the sheep, at the time of the biyah, because he could give her any one sheep, any sheep that he wants. There's no definitive, discrete sheep that you can say, that was yours. And therefore, it's really payment whether it's technically a loan or it's wages, but it's not actually nispas. It doesn't attach itself to the esna.
In other words, the one she ultimately gets from him is the one he meant. Right? Why wouldn't you say that?
So I would like to say here, about God on a limb, that there's no brera here. There's no not only is there no brera, right? Now, brera is, I do something now with an undetermined fact, and once the fact is determined, I say that's what I had in mind. So firstly, it's not clear he has one in mind at this point, and secondly, we assume, although this machlok is by deraisa, there's no brera. So I'm gonna slip out of that for the moment here. So the Gemara...
So there's no shibud on all these puzzles.
Even if there's a general shibud, even if we want to argue that, and I would argue there's probably no shibud nechasim here, because there's no shtar, right? The loan, the services, it's same thing as true by a worker. I don't think that there's a shibud nechasim because there's no shtar. It's only a shibud haguf. So therefore, he has to pay her, and whatever he pays her, but I don't think you can say that. You'll see, you wait 1 second, the Gemara will actually, I think, make that clear. So now the Gemara says, "Avachi amar la b'tleze mayhave." Even if he says tleze, so what? Hamichser mishicha. There's no kinyan now. Right? Even you don't need my brera at this point. If once you say this, you don't need the brera question. It doesn't matter if he had in mind a specific tle or not. You know whether you say brera or not. Even in this case where it says zeh, there's no mishicha here. It doesn't belong to her. Right? It means probably he could change his mind if he wants. He still owes her something, but it's not hers from the time of the Bia. So the Gemara says, no, Bizona Ovedes Kochav, the Lokanya B'Mashicha.
What does that mean?
Okay. So this requires a little bit of background, which is the following. I thought we'd be at this earlier. Okay, but I'm going to try anyway now. I should be able to do this. I mentioned earlier that if I give someone kesef, I want to buy, Marshall wants to buy my phone, and he gives me, pulls out $100, gives it to me. And then, you know, there's a fire in the cell phone manufacturing plant that I realize the prices have gone up. And I say, you know what? Sorry, I take your $100. I'm not interested. So the halacha is that I have the right to back out. I have to accept the curse upon myself, that Misha Para Me Anshe Dar Hamabel, the one who exacted punishment, payment from the Dar Hamabel, from the generation of the flood, who asid li para mi Misha ina omid bidiburo. He will in the future exact payment from the person who doesn't keep his word. Now, what's going on here? So there's a machlokas veishlokish and rabbi. And the Mishnah says, the first Mishnah, the fourth parak of Bava Metzia, either parak Hazav or parak Kesef, depending whether you're in Bava or Eretz Yisrael, talks about the fact that when you have two items where one of them is money-like and one of them is less money-like, so if they are currency of some kind, then one of them is considered money and one of them is considered objects. It's considered goods. And the halacha is that when you make a kinyan, giving the money doesn't make a kinyan, but making a mshicha or hagbah on the goods, pulling them, lifting them up, that's what makes the kinyan. So if Marshall picked up with my permission, my phone, to make a kinyan on it, now he just owes me $100. He can't back out, I can't back out. But if he gives me the $100, he hasn't made a kinyan yet, I can back out, and we paskin, he can back out as well. But whichever party backs out has to accept the curse. And the question is why. So Reish Lakish says that Dvar Torah Mishichas Kona. Reish Lakish says that Minat Torah, the reason you can back out, because there's no kinyan. And it's only the Chachamim impose the curse upon someone who's given the money. But we actually hold like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan says that Dvar Torah Ma'os Konos. That Minat Torah, actually when you give cash, it's Kona. Probably Kona, I assume, as well. But certainly the cash is Kona. Why did the Chachamim annul the kinyan of kesef. They did so because they were afraid Shema Yomar Chitacha Nisrufu Baliyah. Your wheat was burned up in the aliyah. What does this mean? It means that I have a very cheap storage shack. I don't really care about the shack, and a fire breaks out. Now, I sold you the wheat in that shack. You gave me the cash. And you know what I say? You know, I'm not going to try to put the fire out. You know why? It's not my problem. It's Marshall's wheat. That's his loss. His bad luck. Right? I'm not responsible for that. I'm not his shomer. So in order to prevent that, they said that if Marshall wants to back out of the transaction, he can. If the shack burns down and I can't deliver the wheat, he doesn't even have to accept the curse. Right. He doesn't have to accept the curse because I can't deliver the wheat and we protected him. But what if I can deliver the wheat? He can back out or I can back out, and whoever backs out has to accept a Misha Parah. So the assumption of the Gemara here, as Tosus, I think, points out, is like Reish Lakish, is that that Dvar Torah Meshichas Kona, which means then, based upon a Gemara in Arachim, don't want to go into it, that whatever kinyan we have, a guy has the opposite kinyan. Okay, it's o kisim kerumim karla misecha, o kano miyad amisecha, o kano miyad is davar hanikta miyad liyad. It's a kinyan mishicha, and it's miyad amisecha, but not from a goy. So a goy kinyanim are with kesef, and a Jew kinyanim are mishicha, and therefore in this case, presumably the Gemara Rashi doesn't spell this out, but when you have the znus, the delivery of anything. It knows we don't say that Meshicha is required for her to be Kona the Tle. As soon as she provides the services, you could call that the equivalent of the cash here, she is Kona the Tle wherever it is. So that's why, you know, when that Braisa that says Ba Aleha, and then he gives her the Esnan, even after 3 years, that it's Esnan Zona, and, well, 1 second, and it has to be B'Tlezeh. That's by a Goya Zona. By a Goya Zona, so Tlezeh, she's Kona as soon as the Bia takes place, even if he doesn't deliver till later. However, by a Zona Yisraelis, so there, the Kenyan, it's not Chal until she actually does a Meshicha. So the Gemara says that the din would be Baal Le'avi Achar Kachanas and Esnana, even if it was Tlezeh, and certainly if it was just Stam Tleh, so the Estan would not be Chal upon that. As an aside, one of the things I mentioned last week is that Esnan Zona is not the way we would typically think of it. Esnan Zona would probably be hard to come by in the state of Israel, because in order to be Esnan Zona, it has to be Bia with a woman where you cannot have Kiddushin at the moment, which means one of the Arayos, or a Goya, where there's no Kiddushin. But if you had, you know, presume that almost any Zona, in Medina Yisrael, who would be Jewish, assuming that they're Jewish, so... Even if he's a Kohen, even if it's an Isser, and there's some Isser involved, she's Psula for whatever reason, nonetheless, the Kiddushin would be Tosin, so the Din of Esnan Zona would not be relevant. So but Goya, it's Goya and the Arayos where the Torah's Din of Esnan Zona actually applies. So that's one answer the Gemara gives to the problem.
How does it become a carbon from a Goy?
A Goy can? A Goy can certainly bring an Ola. Right. The only question is whether the Goy can bring a Shlamim as well. That's, I think, a Machlokas, Satanai.
Yeah, but how do we know the concept of Esnan Zona applies to a Goy?
How do we know?
It says Esnan Zona. You assume, assumption, is it talking about Israel?
So I would say that that the assumption here is that the Isser of Esnan Zona is upon the Hakrava, not upon the person per se. I mean, it does say Lo Savi Esnan Zona Umcher Kleves Hashem Lekecha, but the assumption is we are not, the Isser is not upon the bringer. You're not. It's an animal, it's possible for a carbon, like a Baal Mormon, like anything else that would be possible. So that does seem, you're correct, that does seem to be the assumption here. The Eboy is saying, but we have another possibility. La Olam Bezona Yisraelis. It's a case where it's a Zona Yisraelis, and it's a Tlezeh, and he put it in her Chatzar. But she's not Kona until the act of the Bia. But once the act of Bia happens, the Kinyan is immediate. She doesn't need a Meshicha, because she acquires it through Kinyan Chatzar. Right? There is a halacha that if you have a property, let's say a property that is the Mishtameris, it's safeguarded, And still, you can use that property to acquire things for you. The Gemara in Bava Metzia has a question: how is chatzar kona? Is it mitam yad or mitam shlichus? Is the chatzar considered an extension of your hand? So when it goes in your chatzar, it's like you picked up in your hand, or is your chatzar like your shaliach, your agent, in order to do it? But either way, most of the time, so a kinyan chatzar will work. So in this case, if he took a tle, which means now it's tleza, and he gave it to her to put in her chatzar, and then he said his bali li betleza, when you have the bia, she makes a kinyan immediately, it's simultaneous, and therefore the Esnan Zona would be Chal because it's Tleze. Right? If he didn't, obviously, if he doesn't put, you know, any Tle he puts in our Chatzar is by definition Tleze. So now the Gemara says, one second, Idekoi Bachatzera, Bo Leha, V'achar Kachna Sanla, Hakanya. Let's say he didn't, let's say he, I'm sorry, so Rashi says, how can you say, if she's kona immediately, if it's not mechusar meshicha, but she's kona right now, it's not ba'alav achakach nasanla. And it's nasanla b'sasna, it's a language question. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha, deshavya niala aputiki. He made it this flat, now Sam, this comes to the heart of your question about shibudim. He made this into an aputiki. An aputiki is a special kind of shibud. Normally, when I owe you money, I take out a loan, and you have a shibud, you get a shibud, firstly, on landed properties only, number one. And number two, you don't have a choice necessarily of which one to take. I can choose to give you the one that I want to give you. And aputiki means that you have special rights, the different kinds of aputikis as well. You have special rights in this particular thing. So the Gemara suggests that in this case, in the case where Ba Allah Bachanasan law, he made an aputiki, to Amar la imaisina lach zuse mikan va yom ploni mutav, vim lav shakle be'esnanach. So in this case, on the one hand, he hasn't given it to her until a later time, because it's only hers if he doesn't deliver the money, or whatever he's going to give her, by the time that he's supposed to do it. So that's called Bala. What's that?
A weird type of collateral.
Correct. But if he doesn't deliver in the end, then it turns out she's Kona from now, but it's called Bala V'achanasala because it's not, you know, it really is not, fundamentally, it's not Bala V'achanasala. Because otherwise, it wouldn't be Esnan Zona. It's really Bala V'achanasala V'shasbiya. But it's not clear until later that he has actually given it to her. That he's given a tar at all, and that's why it's called Baal Leha B'Achar Kach Nasanla. Okay, fine. So that ends the discussion of Esnan Zona. We will stop here. The next question of the Gemara is now going to go back to Rav Yanai. In other words, we analyze Rav Yanai through the lens of the question of when Esnan is Chal, and then the next question is what Rav Yanai said really true in terms of payment for something later and whether it's Chal or not Chal. So, God willing, next week we resume with that.